Thank you for joining us on the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, our senior pastor, Ray Noah, continues our series, The Gospel of John, with a message titled, This is Love. Now here's Pastor Ray.
As we come to John chapter 13, we are standing, I think, on holy ground. As we witness the most beautiful display of Christ's love, other than the cross. This is not just love that is talked about. This is not love that is defined. This is love that is demonstrated. This is love that's on display. And I think that if we truly got what was going on here, the Creator, think about this, the Creator stooping to wash the feet of the created. Jesus washes his disciples' feet in this story. The Creator, the Word was with God. The Word was in the beginning. The Word was the agent of creation, Jesus. The Creator stooping to wash the feet of his created. Oh, my. I think that our jaws would just drop in utter amazement if we really got what was going on here. This is love of an altogether higher kind. This is holy ground. So journey with me as we come to John chapter 13. And this story in John 13, this teaching and this demonstration of love and the washing of Jesus' feet, connects us now to Jesus' final hours on earth before he is arrested, before he goes to the mockery of a trial, the horrible punishment that he endured, the cross, his death, resurrection, and his ascension. This connects us to those final hours, but it starts with this extraordinary statement in verse 1. Notice this. It says, it was just before the Passover, and Jesus knew. Now, I want you to stop and just pause on that word knew. Underscore that, circle it, literally in your Bible if you want to, but in your mind for sure. Just hang on to that word, because this is going to be the pivot point for what I'm going to talk about today. Jesus knew. He had foreknowledge of. He had prophetic insight. He had detailed foresight of what he was going to go through, what was going to happen over these next few hours. He knew in detail. Jesus knew the hour had come for him to leave this world and to return or to go to the Father. And having loved his own who were in the world, his disciples, he now showed them the full extent of his love. Jesus knew. He knew not only the difficult path ahead, the path of the cross. He knew not only that the 12 disciples before the night was out would utterly abandon him, desert him, that the love that he was about to show for them certainly would not be reciprocated. But he also knew that two among them would really go off the rails. One of them would betray his love. And another of them would even deny that he knew Jesus at all. Jesus knew that. We're told in verse 2, it was time for supper, and the devil had already prompted Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus said in verse 38, last verse of chapter 13, Jesus said to Peter, he said, Peter, now remember, Peter had just got through saying, Lord, I will stick with you through thick and thin. Even if I have to die with you, Lord, I will do it. And in the last verse, Jesus says to Peter, actually, Peter, no, you won't. Before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you will have denied me three times. You will deny that you even know me. Jesus knew all of this in advance, verse 3 says. Every detail of what these final hours before the cross would hold for him, including what Judas and what Peter would do, their treachery. He fully knows the horror that he's going to endure, and yet he still displays to these guys who would be tools of that horror, Judas, Peter, and the other 10, he still displays to them the full extent of his love, which simply means this. The full extent of his love simply means love at its purest perfection. Love at its purest perfection is what Jesus is now going to display, demonstrate, model to these who would do those things, those awful things to him. So that's the story. That's the setting. So what does Jesus love for these disloyal disciples in this chapter say about Jesus' love for you in this moment? See, this chapter was written so that we would learn and we would understand that what was done then is for us today. So let me give you three things. Not going to be a long sermon, not going to be a complex sermon. Just three things that I think that we can take away from the full extent of Jesus' love for his disciples and by extension then for you and for me. Number one, it means that you are supernaturally loved when from a human perspective, you are not naturally lovable. You know, some time ago, I think we were in California, Lynn and I were going somewhere in the car, and I was being cantankerous. I know you can't believe that I can get that way. I just being obstinate. I can't even remember what it was about. And Linda said to me, Ray Noah, and I know when she says Ray Noah, that it's either going to be really, really good or really, really bad. And she said, Ray Noah, I love you, but you're really hard to love. And don't I know that? I'm really hard to love. I'm not very lovable. And guess what? Neither is the person you're sitting next to. Verse 2 says, the devil had already enticed Judas to carry out his plan to betray Jesus. Verse 11 adds that Jesus knew who would betray him. He knew, Jesus foreknew what was in Judas' heart, that Judas would hand him over to the Jews in the next few hours to be killed. Jesus knew that Judas was going to do that. Now, can you think of anyone more unlovable and unworthy than Judas? Now, in fact, to call someone a Judas, I mean, this has now gone forward. That name has gone forward in history, right? To call someone a Judas is a deal breaker for that relationship. There are not too many names that you could call him that would do that. I mean, maybe akin to that would be to call someone a Hitler, although, you know, when you do that, you know, you just know that they're exaggerating, they're speaking in hyperbole. But if you call someone a Judas, that means they're a backstabber, they're a betrayer, that the relationship is broken. No one, I can't think of anyone more wicked, evil, unlovable, unworthy than Judas, and yet Jesus loved him anyway. Amazing. Knowing everything in and about Judas' past, understanding the utter evil present in his heart at that moment, the infamy that his name would carry, his person would carry into the future, Jesus still knelt as servant, and he washed Judas' feet. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. To the quintessentially imperfect man, Jesus still showed perfect love. So, what that means is that if Jesus loved Judas, then knowing everything about you, your past sin, the junk that is present in your life right now, the failures that are out there, he already knows those even though you don't, the failures that you will experience soon as we get out of church or tomorrow or next week or a year from now or 10 years from now, knowing everything about you past, present, and future, if Jesus loved Judas knowing all of that, then he will still love you no matter what. In fact, there is no sin, there is no darkness that can slow Christ's love for you down, not even one nanosecond, whatever that is. It's pretty quick. Cannot slow. Your stuff, your junk, your sin, your failure cannot slow his love for you down at all. If Judas was worthy of Christ's love, then certainly you will always be the object of Christ's unstoppable love. You're not naturally lovable, but you're supernaturally loved, and that's far more important. Which leads to number two, the second thing that we learn about this, the full extent of Jesus' love. Number two, Jesus' love for you is rooted in his perfect nature and is not dependent upon your imperfect nature. And that's what makes this even possible. You know, it's his nature to love. Jesus' nature is to love. Washing dirty feet and souls, no pun intended, is in his DNA. It's just what he does. Verses 4 and 5 say that Jesus got up from the table. He took off his robe. He wrapped a towel around his waist. He poured water into a basin, and he began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with a towel. Now, I'm not going to get into the literal meaning of what it meant to wash a person's feet in those days, but obviously you can imagine wearing sandals and traveling long, dusty roads, what that must have been like. But again, think about whose feet that Jesus was washing. Again, there was Judas, his feet were going to get washed. There was Peter, his feet would be washed. But there were 10 others there as well. And Jesus knew that they too would desert him before the night was out. Remember, they all fled into the night when Jesus was arrested. One of them, probably John, he doesn't name himself, but it's in this story, ran right out of his, when they grabbed onto his robe, he ran right out of his clothing and he fled into the night naked. I mean, they deserted Jesus in his deepest, darkest hour of need. Obviously, it wasn't their character driving Christ's love. It was despite their flaws that his love flowed out of his character. And that's why you can always count on being the recipient of the full extent of Jesus' love. You can always count on being the object of the full extent, the purest perfection of Jesus' love as well. If nothing could stop Jesus from fully loving a betrayer and a denier and a band of deserters, then nothing will prevent Jesus from fully loving you, even if and especially when you fail him. Now, before I move on to the third facet, I want to just pause right here, because I don't want this just to be theory or theology. You go, yeah, I get that. I believe that. That's good news. I want this to go from the head to your heart. I want it to go from your heart out to your hands and your feet, where it will really get cemented in your heart and in your head. So before I move on to the third facet of the full extent of Jesus' love, I want to give you an assignment from these first two points so that you can make them personal and practical. And here's the assignment. This week, every day this week, just let Jesus love you. That's your assignment this week. Are you up for it? Not a bad assignment, huh? Just let Jesus love you. Simple as that. How? Well, that part's not so simple. Because we erect all kinds of spiritual and emotional barriers that block Christ's love for us. Because of stuff in our lives, we think that we're not worthy of his love. We have a sense of guilt because of our sin. And so we persistently resist Christ's love for us. Or our sense of unworthiness causes us to work for his love. I'm so guilty of that. You know, I worked so hard for something I've already been given freely. And I think a lot of you do as well. I would have made a great Pharisee. I like to work for my favor and my love. You can't do that. I had a friend this week, went out to coffee, and we talked for 3 hours. Time just went by, and he's going through a real tough time. But at the end of the, and he's doing fine. God's really doing some things in his life. But at the end of our conversation, he said, "How are you doing?" Well, you know, I did the obligatory, "I'm great. Things are great at the church, you know." And he goes, "Now, how are you doing?" I said, "I'm fine." He goes, "I know you. And I know that you are probably working to earn God's approval. And you're probably working to earn your church family's approval. So just stop it. You are loved." I'm just like going, oh, he's just getting in there. He says, "Just let Jesus love you." I walked away from that so uplifted. And I want to challenge you this week that you would just let Jesus love you. So, Here's a daily exercise that I think will reduce your resistance and then open the flow of Christ's love for you. Now, you all have access to music, either through your computer or your phone or some other device, right? Right? If you don't, the 70s are calling and they miss you. Go to the store and get something. We all have access to music. So I'm going to ask you to listen to download. You probably already have this. I want you to get a song. Select a song that talks about God's unconditional love for you. And then you're going to listen to it. Now, maybe you're old school and you want to do a hymn. So I would suggest you select a hymn like Just As I Am. Or one of the greatest Christian hymns ever, The Love of God. How measureless. Wow. Or if you want a modern hymn, I think one of the greatest hymns written ever and recently was How Deep the Father's Love. Oh my goodness. Melts me every time. Or maybe you know, hymns are not your thing and you just want to get a new song, a chorus. Then here's one. How about Jesus Culture, Your Love Never Fails? Now, our priority is going to sing that on tour, and they'll sing it here at the finale. And we have a guys group, a boy band, that's going to sing that song. You're going to love it. Your Love Never Fails. And I want you in a quiet time every day, just do it every day. By the way, this shouldn't be just for 1 week. It should be for the rest of your life, but just try it this week. Just get in your quiet time in your space, in your room, and just play that song out loud or in your earphone, whatever, and just bathe in that song. Bathe in the soak, just soak in the tub of that truth. And just let it saturate you, whatever that is about the love. And music is so powerful because it stirs the deepest chords of the human soul. That's why we do music, to declare truth. It stirs us in a way that maybe even preaching doesn't do that. That's why we do the songs that we do. So select that song and just soak in it every day, at least once a day this week. And then after that, I want you to select a verse that talks about God's unconditional love for you. The Bible's full of them. But if you can't think of one, I would suggest Psalm 103, where the psalmist lists out all of the benefits of belonging to the Father. He forgives all of our sins, heals all of our diseases. He has compassion on us like a father has compassion. Wonderful, wonderful chapter, Psalm 103 or maybe 1 John 3:1. I love this verse. It says, behold, this just gets me. I don't know why, but it says, John, our author, says, behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the children of God. And that is what we are. Oh my goodness, I love that. Or how about Romans 5:8? God demonstrated his love. He proved his love beyond doubt in that while you were still a sinner, Christ died for you. Or some other verse. And so after you listen to the song, I want you to meditate on that verse. Just meditate on that verse. And even memorize it if you don't have it memorized. And then finally, I want you just to, after that, just to begin to simply express your gratitude to God for the unconditional love that he has poured out upon you. You know, then go through those verses, go through the song again, and just begin to say, God, thank you for this or that it has prompted in you. Or go through Psalm 103 and just go through the benefits that David lists out of belonging to God and just say, God, thank you that you forgive all of my sins. God, thank you that you heal all of my diseases. God, thank you that you crown my life with goodness. God, thank you that you have come. And just express gratitude, heartfelt gratitude to God for his unconditional love through Jesus Christ for you. Just let Jesus love you. It will transform your day. Do that. It will transform your day. And string enough of those days together, it will transform your life. You are loved supernaturally, even if you're not naturally lovable. And that love is based on his perfect nature. And it has nothing to do with your imperfect nature, right? And then number 3, Jesus' supernatural love for you, this kind of brings it full circle. This activates his love. Jesus' supernatural love must turn your imperfect nature into a conduit of God's love for others. That's very critical to this story. Jesus said in verses 34 and 35, I'm giving you a new command. Not a suggestion, you know, not wishful thinking. He says, I'm giving you a commandment, just as I have loved you. Now, love each other. Experiencing the full extent of his love can't help but to turn you into a pipeline of transforming love. It can't help. And if it doesn't, if you're not a conduit, a pipeline of God's love to others, then you need to go back and experience God's love for you, because it can't help but transform you. When you realize how unworthy you are and yet how worthy he's made you to experience his love, how could you not then become a vehicle, a spokesman, a model for his love? And again, that now, not to put all the pressure on you to do that, but that love flows from his character and not out of yours. It's his flowing through you. It's not yours. But as you surrender to it, you become the human embodiment of Jesus' love for others. Now, here's the deal. To know the full extent and to become the conduit of unconditional love to others is the summit of the God-blessed life. Let me say that again. To know the full extent of Christ's love and then to become the conduit of that love is the summit of the God-blessed life. Now, the graduates are going to leave home probably and go to college. You're going to prepare for a career. You're thinking about, what do I do with my life? I don't want to just, you know, not do anything with it, but I want to be successful. I want to experience significance. I mean, I want to live a deeply satisfying life, and that's why you're going away to prepare, and if you're diligent with that, it will happen for you. But above all of that, the greatest thing that you can experience in life that will lead to your success and your significance and your satisfaction is to be that pipeline of God's love to other people. There's nothing greater in life than that. That is the purpose for which God made you and us. That's the purpose for why we exist. It's the answer, by the way, to your heart's deepest longing. You're thinking, I just want a career. I just want a soulmate. I just want to do this or that. No, and those are all fine, but the deepest longing, the deepest need that can only be filled in your life is the one that God can fill, where he loves you and you receive his love, and then that love begins to flow out. That is the high point, the zenith of living. Not only that, but it's the quickest and the surest path. The quickest and the surest path to success in life and to living a significant life and to being satisfied in life. And now listen to this. This is the preeminent mark of Christian discipleship. This is the preeminent characteristic of what an authentic disciple is all about. Jesus said in verse 35, by this, everybody will know that you are my disciples. How? How? That you love one another. This is how the world knows. This is how you identify as a disciple. By the love you have for one another. If you're going to be a fully devoted follower of Christ, then you'll have to love like Jesus loved. You'll need to love in not just in word, but in deed, like Jesus did. You'll have to demonstrate love by humbly serving like Jesus did. You'll need to lovingly serve someone undeserving like Jesus did. You'll need to do it proactively. Jesus didn't wait to be loved before he loved. You'll need to do it unconditionally, proactively and unconditionally like Jesus did. If you want to be Jesus' disciple, then loving his way isn't optional. Verse 34, it's a command. Jesus said in verses 14 and 15, go back, I know I'm jumping all around here, but verses 14 and 15, Jesus said, as your Lord and teacher, I've washed your feet, so you ought to wash each other's feet. I've given you an example to follow. Do as I have done to you. It's abundantly clear from this chapter that loving Jesus means loving others. And loving others means serving them Loving isn't just a theory. It means serving them, especially when they don't deserve it. Not the deserving ones, you're to love them too, but especially when they don't deserve it. The betrayer, the deserter, the denier. Now listen, this is not just a definite demand, but it's a delightful demonstration of discipleship. Here's the best part of this, that makes you blessable. It's not just this, do this, love, I command you to love. It sounds kind of counterintuitive, doesn't it? But he's saying, listen, this is important to me. I'm loving you, so you, how can you not love one another? And as you do this, I can bless you. Look at verse 17. It says, now that you know these things, God will bless you for doing them. The cool thing about being a conduit, whether it's through generosity and giving or serving the energy or just loving, the cool thing about being a conduit, seeing yourself as a pipeline, is you're not just a pipeline, really. You become a reservoir that overflows. So the more that flows into you and it spills over, your reservoir just gets bigger and bigger. It stays. It blesses you. It touches you. The more love you'll receive, the more generosity will come back to you, the more satisfaction comes to you when you serve as a conduit. Say, God, my life is for your glory alone. I want to be a pipeline to your glory. You will do better than the people that you're actually serving and giving and loving. Just the way that works. Now, again, I'll close with this. To make this practical and personal, I don't want it just to be theory. I want to give you another, here's another assignment, okay? Here's another assignment. It's two-part assignment. So to do this, number one, you've got to plan for interruptions in your calendar. This is not going to be easy. To love those who don't deserve it. To love those that deserve it's easy. But to love those who don't deserve it will not be easy. So you need to plan for the Lord to interrupt you to be able to serve as his conduit. Now, sounds weird, but most of us have scheduled opportunities for love right out of our routine, especially when it comes to people that aren't very lovable. You know, we're I think, too preoccupied to love like Jesus loved. But think about what Jesus did. Matthew 20, it's a great story. It tells of Jesus, he's walking down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he's interrupted by some blind guys that are yelling at him. And they're saying, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on us. And what does it say that Jesus did? It says, Jesus stopped. And he said, what do you want me to do for you? Now think about that. Jesus stopped. The Word that became flesh, the Word that was with God, the Word that was God, the Word that created all things, stopped. God turned aside and made himself available to those society had cast aside. He was interrupted. And most of the transforming interactions that people had with Jesus came as the result of interruptions to his schedule. But he embraced those. He planned for those. What we see as intrusions, Jesus saw as invitations to be a conduit of the Father's love to people. And if you're willing to be a conduit of God's love, you will need to deliberately create space to be interrupted. Deliberately create space in your mind and in your calendar, on your calendar. Say, Lord, my calendar is yours. Interrupt me as you need to. That's part one. Plan for interruptions. Part two, plan to lavishly love the least likely. Plan to lavishly love the least likely. You've literally got to schedule it in because you will be too protective against people like that to see it as an opportunity to love like Jesus. But if you want to matriculate, that's a great word, isn't it? Graduates are going to matriculate to college. If you want to enroll, Linda says I use big words and I shouldn't. So if you want to enroll in Christ's graduate school of love, then this is a great way. Find someone who least expects it or least deserves it and lovingly serve them. Jesus said in Matthew 5:46, if all you can do is love the lovable, don't expect a bonus. Anyone can do that. It's from the Message version, obviously. Don't just love people that love you or that you love automatically. Anybody, if you have breath, you could do that. Find someone who is least deserving, least likely, least deserving, and love them. If you really want to experience Christ's transforming love, go out of your way to deliberately unleash his love on your betrayer, on your denier, on your deserter. It's not going to be easy, but do it. I mean, who knows if it will have an effect on them? Who knows? But that's above your pay grade. You're just the conduit. It didn't have an effect on Judas, did it? But it sure did on Peter. He became the apostle, the first leader of the New Testament church. The reward for you, and potentially for the object of your love, I guarantee will be worth the risk of stepping out, sacrificing, and loving the unlovely. So are you ready to do that? Will you take on these assignments to love, to let Jesus love you, and then to find ways to plan for and make room? You know, I've told you bits and pieces of my own testimony. When I was a teenager, I was less lovable then than I am now. And I was going through a prodigal time in my life. I became a prodigal son to my pastor father. We lived in a small community where everybody was up in everybody's business. So I was living a sinful life. And it just came crashing in on me. I got busted. I got caught. I got exposed for stuff I'd been doing. And my parents were so gracious and loving, but there were consequences. They unleashed consequences on my life. And I understood I deserved it. People were talking about it. You know, it was a little bit of a scandal in that small church I grew up in. But there was one lady, my Sunday school teacher, all the way from middle school through high school. She stuck with it. I mean, she didn't, you know, teach for 6 months and say, I'm out of here. She was that Sunday school teacher 6 years of my life. And her name was Betty. And, you know, Betty was wacky. I mean, her theology was, I even knew it as a sixth grader. This theology can't be right. I mean, sixth graders don't think like that. And even I was going, this is something's not right here with this. She was into what we call the positive confession, you know, the prosperity gospel and all that. So I just thought, nah, this doesn't line up with what I know of the word. So she was hyper that way. Hyper positive confession. But I tell you what, Betty loved me. She stubbornly loved me, and she demonstrated that love in a serving attitude. When everybody else was just mad at me, my family, my brothers, my siblings were like ready to kick me out. My parents were disappointed. People in the church were going, what a doofus. Betty believed in me, and she loved me, and it paid off. I think. I hope that you will be a Betty to somebody who doesn't deserve it. You don't know what will happen. Only God does. But the risk of doing that is worth the reward.
Thanks again for listening to this week's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. If you want more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center or have a prayer need, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Thanks for listening.